Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 30 of the Football Absurdity Podcast. My name is Jeff Crisco. I'm here with my co-host Mike Valverde. No Evan Hoovler today. He's not available. So it's just me and Mike today, back to the OG crew. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, it's Friday. Doing a normal routine, going to go out to eat with the wife since she gets home.
Nice. And where are you guys headed?
We're going to go to Casa Ramos.
Casa Ramos. So Chinese food?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Today was pretty good for me, too. I only had one claim today. So I drove to Fairfield, did a claim, waited for a second claim, didn't get it, drove back. That was pretty much my day.
Now, is that an annoying day or is that like pretty cool because you only have one claim?
It was pretty cool. And traffic cooperated. This week, I don't know what was going on, but I was... So, for people who don't know, Fairfield's about 55 miles from where I live. And it's been taking like almost 2 hours to get there in the morning. This morning, I stopped to take a call, and it only took me an hour and 10 minutes. It only took me an hour to get back. So, it was just like... It was perfect. It was a nice leisurely day. Weather was good. One claim I had was really easy. So it worked out really well. So good day, pretty good day to backslide into the weekend with. So before we get started, just, you know, websites, footballabsurdity.com. If you go there, you can see something that Evan wrote, the reason why he's not here. Put an article out. It's a very nice article, very touching. And then we're starting to do fantasy football fallout of all the free agency moves that have happened. And that includes the Antonio Brown trade. Odell Beckham trade is going to be going up next week. And Twitter is FBallAbsurdity. And I'm at Jeff Crisco, K-R-I-S-K-O. Mike's at RFL Red Zone. Don't go to JM Crisco because that account is suspended for making fun of neo-Nazis. Today what we're going to be doing, it's the first week of free agency. It had the quote-unquote legal tampering window, which is essentially, hey, free agency starts, but nobody's signing on the line yet. Gives guys like Anthony Barr a chance to back out of his contract. Rashad Perriman backed out of his contract. Verbal agreement he had with the Browns. And then everybody started signing on Wednesday. What Mike and I are going to do today is we're going to pick three guys each, three winners, three losers from the first week of free agency, and just kind of talk through those guys for fantasy football in 2019. Usually I like to reference ADP, average draft position, or expert consensus ranking on these guys, but it's also fluid right now that it's kind of a fool's errand to do that, right, Mike? Like, this is all going to change tomorrow.
Yeah. And not only is it going to change, but there's so many free agents out there that even what's already been signed now is going to change what's already changed today or yesterday.
Yeah. Like, perfect example. I published the Antonio Brown piece yesterday, and then Dante Moncrief goes and signs with them. So I have to go in there today and update it because it's already out of date. Like, it's right now, it's such a balancing act of trying to like get content out, or versus waiting till everything settles. It's like, you put something at, literally the moment you click publish, it could be out of date. It's one of those things. So hopefully by the time this thing goes up, this hasn't all changed, but we'll start with winners and losers today. Probably should take up the whole episode. If not, Mike and I will vamp at the end, figure out something else to fill out the time. So Mike, we both talked about how we had a good day. So why don't we start with winners? So who is your number three winner this week out of the first week of fantasy or of free agency?
Well, I didn't really rank them, but I do have three winners. And one of the winners I put down was Adam Humphries.
Humphries went from the Bucks to the Titans, right?
Exactly. And he signed for 4 years, $36 million, so $9 million per year. The couple of things about Adam Humphries that I like is his targets in his first 4 years has gone up each and individual each season. And he's sort of a name that isn't really known unless you're really a hardcore, I think, fantasy football player. If you do this by casuality, you're probably never going to have heard of him. But last season, he had his best production with 76 receptions, 816 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So that's really good numbers. They're really solid numbers for someone in the Buccaneers offense that has so many different key components that it's hard to give a player like Adam Humphries so many different targets. Not only that, they have Mike Evans there too as well. So you know that most of those targets are going to go to him. So he steps away from a great talented offense now, almost flipped to the other side of the spectrum. He's now going to be on the Tennessee Titans, and they really need a number two receiver. For instance, Deion Lewis was second on the team with receptions. So,
oh my gosh. Running back Deion Lewis.
Exactly. And yeah, that just can't happen. You just can't have your running back be the second in receptions. I mean, I'm sure things would have been different if they're tied in. The name escapes me right now, but tight end was there, didn't get hurt the first game of the season.
Delaney Walker. Yeah.
Well, Delaney Walker, correct. And so if he didn't go out the first game of the season, I'm sure that might have been different, but still. So he comes in and is going to be an excellent boost, like almost right away. The problem is that you have probably a running offense with Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to be really focusing on running the ball. And you have Marcus Mariota, Ryan Tannehill, probably depending on the name of the week. I don't think that Marcus Mariota or Ryan Tannehill is going to earn a spot. I think this is going to be a rotating door, as we saw last year with Tampa Bay. One quarterback is going to get 4 weeks, and next week is going to be 4 weeks for that quarterback. But anyway.
Really?
Yeah. So with that said, I like Adam Humphries where he's going to go. He should get a lot more opportunities. I think you're going to probably see him not hit that 76-816 mark, but I think you're going to see him be around there. So very good flyer late in the draft and going to a team that needs a definite boost in offense.
All right, so Adam Humphries going to Tennessee is your big winner, or your one of your big winners. My number three winner actually stayed put. It's Mike Williams in Los Angeles. And the reason that he's a big winner is the other Williams there, Tyrell. He signed with Oakland on Thursday, 4 years, $44 million with $22 million guaranteed. And what this does is Mike Williams was a top 10 pick in the draft a couple years ago. He kind of came on at the end of last year. He scored 5 touchdowns in his last 6 games. And what this does is Tyrell Williams' targets. He averaged about 5.25 targets per game over the last few years. And I think most of those end up going to Mike Williams. He played only one game without Mike Williams last year, and it was kind of a weird game. He had 4 targets. He caught all 4 of them, but it looks like this huge fantasy day because he had 2 touchdowns, but he only had 25 yards. So it's, you know, the splits with and without Tyrell Williams doesn't really say a lot about what Mike Williams could do. But what I do like about what Mike Williams can do is that last year he had 6 games with 5 or more targets, and he went for, I'll just run down his stat lines. These are games with more than 5 targets last year. 7 catches, 78 yards, 4 catches for 81 yards and 2 touchdowns, 5 catches for 81 yards, 5 catches for 65 yards and a touchdown, 3 for 45. You know, you can't get 75 yards every single game. But you know, 5 out of 6 is a pretty good. I'm sorry, 4 out of 5. That's a pretty good number for games where he had at least 5 targets. And I think that's going to become his floor in 2019. So I think the allowing Tyrell Williams to leave will open up some targets in the offense for Mike Williams. And I think that he's a big winner just by staying put. He doesn't even have to pack a single bag to be a winner in free agency. And it's just the loss of Tyrell Williams really will help him take a step forward in 2019.
Now, since you picked Mike Williams and I picked Adam Humphries, who is now on the Titans, but their number one receiver is Corey Davis, and Corey Davis and Mike Williams were drafted the same year. Mm-hmm. Both of them have, you know, been struggling. They're definitely not showing where they were drafted at. Who do you think is going to have the better year, Corey Davis or Mike Williams?
Mike Williams, just because the Mariota Tannehill thing is just going to throw such a wrench in it all. And Mariota can't stay healthy, but Tannehill sucks. So it's like, if they really do, you know, let's say neither one of them starts more than 10 games this year. We'll just say it's 10-6. Like, that's going to be such a headache and so much turmoil. And it is a run first offense, like you said. And I don't know. I just don't have faith in the Titans offense as much as I do the Chargers offense, because the Chargers offense just, it hums, it just does its thing, it scores week in and week out, and it's really a struggle for the Titans to put up put up touchdowns. So I would say, from a fantasy perspective, I would rather Mike Williams will probably end up having a better year than Corey Davis, just because of, I don't have faith in Marcus Mariota. That's what it ultimately comes down to, and this Ryan Tannehill thing really throws a kink in the conch, as it were. So I don't know. I think Corey Davis is the better player. I just don't like the situation as much.
Yeah, I can agree with you. Definitely that Chargers offense is a lot more explosive. And
plus,
yeah.
Plus, let's see. He is a Keenan Allen injury away from being the wide receiver one.
For true.
The Chargers. So, and true. And I mean, it's not like Keenan Allen has never played started all 16 games in his career, because he hasn't. He's played in 16 the last 2 years, but he missed all but 9 games over the course of 2 seasons in 2015 and 2016, and he does get banged up a lot. So that is something to look out for as well. I think, you know, Keenan Allen can be counted on to miss a couple games pretty much every year. So that's my number 3 guy, Mr. Mike Williams. And who is your next winner in free agency?
My next winner is a veteran running back, and that is Latavius Murray.
Latavius Murray is your number 2. I'm going to disagree with you. My number 2 running back is Latavius Murray. So why don't you go first on that? That's my number 2 guy too, but
that's really surprising how we both fell on that with all those guys out there. But he signed a 4-year, $14.4 million contract to go from the Minnesota Vikings to the New Orleans Saints. And he will be not only on an immediate contender for the playoffs. I mean, not to say that the Vikings aren't, but after last season, who knows what's going to happen. The Saints, you're pretty much guaranteed you're going to be in the playoffs. Not only that, he's going to be inserted automatically into the Mark Ingram role, and we've seen what Mark Ingram can do. I'm not saying that Latavius Murray is as good as Mark Ingram. He can't catch as well as Ingram can, and Mark Ingram is just, you know, better overall running back. But Murray does add a tremendous amount of value. I think you're going to see a lot of Murray as far as getting close to the goal line, and he plays behind a great offensive line. So he's going from a total crud of an O-line to one of the best in football. So just in a little comparison, Ingram had 645 yards and 6 touchdowns in 12 games last season on 138 carries. And I can definitely see that kind of output from Murray on an average game basis. So he'll probably get upwards about 800 and maybe 8 touchdowns in 16 games. And then I also, if you're looking at receptions in comparison, then Murray only had 128 in 77 games, where Ingram had 200 in, I think, 112 games. So it's quite a drastic change. And that means Murray will be off the field more. And Alvin Kamara, if stayed healthy, is going to basically be even more of a higher priority for you to draft now that Ingram is gone. So you got that as well.
Yeah, and that touches on a lot of the points that I was thinking with Latavius Murray, and I'll just run those down real quick. Dude is yards per carry isn't everything, but it is something. Dude is a career 4.1 yards per carry. And what I like to do is I everything I do, I like to do a little, you know, little fun math with it and see what ends up happening. So what I did was I took a look at the running back scoring for the Saints over the last, I believe this goes back to 2005, and where they ranked among the league leaders. So I'm going to run back. This goes from 2008 back to 2017, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 2006. So they were the, this is in half point PPR. Number one, this is for running backs as well. Number one scoring offense, number one scoring offense, number two, number one, number one, number three, number one, number one. In 2010, they were number 14. I don't know what happened that year. That was Pierre Thomas, Reggie Bush, and Chris Ivory. They dropped down to 14. I think that might have been the Bounty Gate year. Don't quote me on that.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, so somewhere in there. And that was 2010. And then in 2009, number two. 2008, number one. 2007, number five. 2006, number two. So it's we have a over a decade of track record, minus one blip year, of the Saints just having an incredibly prolific offense for running backs. And that kind of tracks because Drew Brees, I mean, he runs a great offense, but you don't end up with one guy except for Jimmy Graham who gets a lot of touchdowns. He kind of distributes the ball around. What ends up happening too is everybody's worried about where it's going to go in the passing game, and they can run a draw or a delayed handoff to a running back, and they get the easy touchdown. So he's entering just this incredible offense for running backs. And like you said, I don't think he's as good of a running back as Mark Ingram was, and I do think that his health is a question. That's been a question mark for him his whole career, but he's entering an incredible situation, and he's entering an incredible situation with a great offensive line, like you said, in a good offense. And over the last 2 years, if you take it per 16 games, because there was a suspension for Ingram, but he averaged out to 210 touches or 210 carries, 56 targets per 16 games with Alvin Kamara. So that's, call it 250 touches for Latavius Murray if he can stay healthy. And, we're off to the races. Latavius, like I said, only question is health, but with Kamara, Ingram averaged 1,300 yards from scrimmage and 10 touchdowns per 16 games. I think 800 to 1,300, 8 to 10 touchdowns, your thing versus this thing, I think that's a good range for him. And that's probably at the end of the year, good chance at being a running back too. And he could end up easily within the top 15 if he can stay healthy, just on the back of, scoring all those touchdowns. So obviously I like your number two with Latavius Murray, because we agree.
Yeah, and if Kamara goes down, then you're really looking at something special. So as far as handcuffs are going, he's probably, unless just not thinking clearly, he's probably the number one handcuff that drafters should go after.
He's the new Tevin Coleman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we'll get more to Tevin Coleman later, but he could be the new standalone value, but if the lead running back goes down, then he's your guy. So that was winners are Adam Humphries, Mike Williams, and Latavius Murray. So who do you have for your my guy will be my number one winner, but it'll just be your next winner.
So my next winner, and I sort of went in the kind of the similar direction you went as far as a player just staying put, and that player is Lamar Miller.
Oh, Lamar Miller.
Yeah, and I was actually kind of surprised that they didn't make a move, but they didn't, and it's not a priority for them. So I think definitely Miller escaped the whole Le'Veon Bell situation. And he had his best season last year as well, and his second best in yards per carry average, finishing with 973 yards and 5 touchdowns on 210 carries. And doing a quick math, that's 4.6 yards per carry. So he was definitely up there. I think his best was 4.7. And then his rookie year, he had 5.1, but that was in just limited time and action, so I didn't really count that. He is in his final year of his contract, so that usually means I better put on some dancing shoes and go out there and do the best I can, because teams are going to be looking at me to move on, or the Texans are going to pay him a lot of money, depending on the situation. The GM of the Texans has already come out and stated that Miller is our guy. He's going to be the lead back. The only thing right now that I see as far as his fantasy value are the unknowns. So will the Texans draft a top flight running back? What about Deontay Foreman? And still free agency isn't over yet. They could go Jay Ajayi. He's a name out there that still needs a job. So, we don't know, and those are the unknowns. So, if they don't draft the top flight running back, and they don't pick someone that's skilled like Jay after free agency, he can be really, really good for you as a running back too. Maybe get him around a running back 3 on the draft board, because people don't really think Lamar Miller is all that special. So, you know, one of those guys that you can get on the cheap.
Yeah, that's kind of the role that Lamar Miller seems to occupy every year. He's like running back 25 that just solidly puts in running back 15 to 20 numbers every week, just week in and week out. So that's a good one. And the point that he's a going into his free agent year, he's got, let's see, he is going to turn 28 in April. So this will be his last contract probably. So he'll be looking to get that big payday. The one thing for me, and I think that this will help solidify his position and help him take a step forward, is he's scored the same amount of touchdowns these 3 years, with the, Texans, and it's only 6. So yeah. I really feel like he averages well over, 1,000 yards a season on the air and, on the ground. So I think he should score more touchdowns than that. And with a better offense, hopefully this year with Deshaun Watson's third year and with Kiki QT and Nuke Hopkins, I think, he could take a step forward with the touchdowns this year, which will really solidify that position with the Texans.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the only, as far as touchdowns go, and you make a good point there, I think that danger is with Deontay Foreman, especially if he can come back from his injury. I mean, he played last year, but if he's at full health, then that can be really a problem for his touchdowns.
This is my hot take, which is the torn Achilles would ruin Deontay Foreman's career. No running back has ever come back from an Achilles tear to be any good. And so I think that he will get some limited run, will not do much of anything, and will flounder on the depth chart. It's unfortunate to call for the death knell of a guy who's 22 years old on his career, but just nobody's ever come back from an Achilles tear. So it's like, I don't have faith that he'll be the first, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's really a difficult thing. I think only Adrian Peterson actually really had any kind of success after such a tear. But yeah, usually you'll see them. What it used to be was players, that'd be the end of their career completely. But now that they come back, but they're never the top flight kind of running back as they were before. And Deontay Foreman is not someone that is agile and you know those kind of things. So he's even putting more pressure on his knee than someone that is sort of a cut type of running back.
Yeah, he's not the type of guy who you would say that he's likely to beat the odds with that one, and yeah. have a long productive career. So. My number one winner, a guy who I think will have a long and productive career, was drafted number one overall last year, by the Factory of Sadness, the previously 0-16 Browns. And that big winner is Baker Mayfield. And that has 100% to do with Odell Beckham Jr., being traded to the Browns. Baker is automatically a top five running or wide. The position he actually plays, he's automatically a top five quarterback for me next year with that offense, because now he's got, well, for half the season, he's got Hunt, he's got Chubb, he's got Njoku, he's got Landry. And you put on top, unarguably a top five wide receiver in the NFL, possibly number, you know, easily top three, possibly the best wide receiver in the NFL. You add Odell Beckham to that, and they are off to the races. After they fired Hugh last year, his 16 game pace was 4,500 yards, 38 touchdowns, 6 interceptions with Freddie Kitchens. And if he'd done that all year, he would have been the number 7 quarterback on the year, which was more than Rodgers, Wilson, Breeze, Cam, and Brady. And what I did was I looked at, because Beckham has missed some games in the past with various injuries and such. And I looked at Eli Manning. So in the game since Odell Beckham's been drafted, with Beckham, Eli's averaged 16.6 fantasy points per game. He goes for 272 passing yards, 1.75 touchdowns, and 0.8 interceptions per game. Without Beckham, he sits at 13.2 fantasy points per game, 230 passing yards, 1.75 touchdowns, and a pick per game without Odell Beckham. So that fantasy point difference of 3.36 is what it came down to. If Odell Beckham gives half of those fantasy points as a boost to Baker Mayfield versus what he did with Freddie Kitchens last year. So if he gives him an extra, 1.65 fantasy points per game, that boosts Baker Mayfield up to the number 4 quarterback last year, tied with Deshaun Watson. Just from that little bit of boost per game, just from having Odell Beckham, that's an extra, 60 passing yards or so per game, we'd say. So that is going to be incredible. I think Baker Mayfield's going to take a huge step forward. I think he was going to take a pretty good step forward, but with so many weapons in his offense and one of them being the best weapon in the NFL, potentially, if not one of them, I think that Baker Mayfield is the this last week in terms of his fantasy football production going into 2019. Now, he's the big winner, but then there's a separate question. Nobody can disagree with that, that he's a huge winner getting Odell Beckham. I mean, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So then you get the question of, well, what's the helium on him going to be? Because you turn on any fantasy football podcast and my take is not unique or new or different or anything like that. But then you get in the question of, all right, so am I going to pay the freight on Baker Mayfield? I'm going to guess probably not, because I'm going to guess, top five ranking on him probably going to be universal. And I'm not going to want to pay that freight, because if he might end up in the fourth, fifth round. And in these leagues where quarterbacks go like crazy, he could be like a third round pick. I'm not going to pay that. So he's the big winner, but I doubt I'll have him on any teams next year, which really sucks, because I was I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan with what he did last season.
Yeah, me too. In fact, I'm sort of a Cleveland Browns fan. I'm just really, really freaking excited about how this team has turned around, and they're not such a doormat anymore. And I'm going to be excited to see them play and see if they can maybe even win a division. I mean, that is something that I don't think we could have said in the last, 30 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that, since the Browns came back, that it hasn't been able to be said in this iteration of the Browns. So it's an exciting time for Cleveland. A lot of that also has to do with the Steelers seem to be imploding, and the Ravens lost or traded most of their starters. If you count Joe Flacco as a starter, but they lost Weddle, Mosley, Suggs, and some other guys on and offense. So it's going to be kind of a mess in that division because the Bengals suck out loud, but yeah, it's an exciting time to be a lifelong Browns fan like I am. It can't all be sunshine and rainbows. We went through our biggest winners, which are Humphreys, Latavius Murray, Lamar Miller, Baker Mayfield, and Mike Williams. But now the losers, the guys who had their fantasy value dashed this week. So, Mike, who's the first guy you want to talk about as being a big fantasy loser?
You know, he grabbed a lot of headlines, but it's not only his ability, but it's the team that he landed on, and that is quarterback Nick Foles.
Ah, Nick Foles. Nice. Okay.
So signed a huge contract, 4 years, $88 million, and is going to be the new starting quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So they're going to pay this guy this ton of money, and all he's going to do is throw to, receivers.
D.D. Westbrook.
Yeah. Someone's going to be at the wide receiver.
Well, they lost Dante Moncrief to the Steelers, like I mentioned earlier, and they have Dede Westbrook and oh my gosh, why am I blanking on the other guy? Mike, why'd you do this to me?
There's Keelan Cole, but is he worth anything?
Marquise Lee, DJ Chark, DJ Chark. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, that guy too.
They have a whole mess of number two wide receivers.
Yeah, it's not anything fantastic. So running offense, you know they're going to give it to Fournette or whatever the running back is when Fournette is hurt. So not only that, but it's just going to be dinks and dunks from Foles. So you have a running offense, a quarterback that isn't going to just be one that's just going to take care of the ball. And so, yeah, it's just not going to be very flashy. So I there's a thought that came across my mind right now, and I really think that Nick Foles is someone who's won the lottery, but just won't have to pay the taxes. And what I mean by that is he got a hell of a lot of money, but is it going to be required to do anything, and therefore does not have to pay the taxes on winning that lottery?
I think he's going to be a very expensive bridge guy. They'll see what they'll have in him next year. They'll have Nick Foles, and then they'll bounce on that. So I like the, he won the lottery and doesn't have to pay the taxes, because I think they're going to tear down and rebuild, and he'll just get to run away with the money. But he'll do nothing in fantasy is kind of what I think.
Yeah. It's one of those guys that you should definitely stay away from. Maybe if you want, but I doubt it. Cause like players like Jameis Winston and those guys are going to be down there. But if you want to take a dart throw, that's probably the max value you're going to get.
He has almost no upside. That's the thing is he has almost no upside. Like okay. Let's go to a world where the Jacksonville Jaguars are good. What would you envision? It's not them slinging the ball. It's not Nick Foles dropping, 50-yard bombs all game long. It's Leonard Fournette running the ball. It's a ball control offense. It's the defense coming back. It's don't let Nick Foles hurt you. And so it's like there's almost no upside there. There's no point. It's just not. If the Jaguars are going to be good, it is not because Nick Foles wills them to be good, is what it comes down to.
And they don't even have TJ Yeldon on the team anymore, a security blanket, for the quarterback. Yeah. So yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. So that's a good first loser. My loser. We briefly touched on him earlier. It's kind of sad because over his last seven games last year, this guy averaged over 95 yards per game, it was mostly running the ball. He got one reception, on pace to rush for 1,500 yards over a season, and now he's the backup. That's Gus Edwards. Huge loser with Mark Ingram there, because Mark Ingram's pretty much going to take over that role. There's going to be Gus Edwards at this point is a handcuff only, because it's not going to be a situation like in New Orleans where Kamara and Ingram are sharing the load. This is a run the ball, run the clock, let your defense do their work. That's what their offense was after Lamar Jackson took over last year. And there's no going back from Lamar Jackson. Joe Flacco's gone. He's a Bronco now. That's official. So it's going to be running the ball, you know, their lead back running the ball 15 to 20 times a game. And that got ripped out of the hands of Gus Edwards, and that's going to Mark Ingram. Those numbers over his last six games last year, he was the running back 11. So this is in a 12-team league, this is a number one running back over the last, you know, almost half the season. And that was just, the legs were just cut out from under him completely with the addition of Mark Ingram to the Ravens. So yeah, Gus Edwards is my number three loser. The Gus bus is in the shop for repairs.
Yeah. And not only that, as you touched on with Lamar Jackson there, he's going to have to fight two running backs, because you know that Mark Ingram is going to even struggle as far as rushing the ball, because that's all Lamar Jackson does is run the ball. And to have to go through two running backs to even produce anything, yeah, Gus Edwards is going to have, I don't even know if you can really handcuff him at all, just because Ingram is, he pretty much has been healthy throughout his career. I can't think of any injuries. And yeah, it's just one of those things where Gus Edwards really got the back end of things.
Yeah, I don't believe in handcuffs, but if you do, Gus Edwards would be one, just because the whole thing, he doesn't have a history track record. Well, you don't have a history track record, an injury track record, until you have one, you know. you know, it's the NFL. I mean, it's everybody gets hurt eventually. It's just something that happens. I mean, Frank Gore cracked his dang hip, and that guy has played forever. So everybody eventually gets hurt. That's just the nature of the beast.
Yep.
So my number two guy, and it brings me no joy to say this, and it deeply, deeply pains me to say this, because this is my guy. This is my boy. Last week I had to be the Jimmy Graham guy, or 2 weeks ago I had to be the Jimmy Graham guy. This week I have to say that one of the losers is my best friend. Some will say my son, my boy, Eric Ebron. Poor one out. They added a tight end in Devin Funchess to an already crowded tight end room. They just call him a wide receiver, but that's a large man, 6'4", 225. That is a small tight end. That's what Devin Funchess is. And I just see that what Devin Funchess is going to do for your Indianapolis Colts is take away from Eric Ebron. Ebron was third in red zone targets last year, and he had the second most red zone third in red zone targets among tight ends. But he had the second most red zone touchdowns overall with 11. He was second on the team in targets, and that'll undoubtedly drop. I see Funchess getting, you know, maybe 500 to 600 yards, 6 to 7 touchdowns, and that will almost all come at Eric Ebron and Jack Doyle's detriment. And just because I loved Eric Ebron, he was my loser, but I think Jack Doyle, he'll have some issues too. He just got surgery. He should be healthy by the season, but we'll see. But I think the addition of Devin Funchess for 1 year and $13 million, which, what are you doing, Indy? First of all, Mike, before you say anything, you have to defend that contract. I think that will lead to a big step back for Eric Ebron, which means I'm not touching him. He's back in the Kyle Rudolph range for me. I'm not touching him unless he hits double digit rounds. So it's unfortunate. I loved Eric Ebron. I was right about him for 1 year, and now he's back into the suck, and it's not anything that he did wrong. So my second biggest loser is Eric Ebron.
Yeah. I can't agree with you more on that. That was exactly my thought when the Colts did sign Funchess. I was just, yeah, there goes Eric Ebron and his back-to-back bid to put up anywhere near double-digit touchdowns because, yeah, as you mentioned, Funchess is a hybrid, you know, and he's more of a tight end than a receiver, and that's just not good news.
Yep. So, rest in peace, Eric. I was right about you for 1 year. I'm going to be wrong about you for the rest of time. So that makes me sad on a personal level more than anything else. So, but you didn't defend that contract. $13 million for Devin Funchess.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand it myself. I only like the fact that it's a 1 year deal, but outside of that, I think he's entirely paid way too much. And then when you compound that to the fact that the Colts haven't signed really anybody outside of their own team, it's very confusing on what they're doing with this large amount of space that could fill the Grand Canyon, but yet they're just not shoving anything in that hole. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what they're doing, but hey, they got a lot of money, so yeah.
Good for yeah, them. But I mean, when you have the opportunity to give $13 million to a guy with a 51.7% career catch rate, I mean, you got to jump at that opportunity, man. Those are elitely bad numbers.
Oh, it's horrible. I'll be very disappointed if they give up on Jatrell Inman. I would rather have given that money to Inman than Devin Funchess.
I mean, at least Inman has some potential to be good, but I mean, Funchess, he got a lot of pub and run in Carolina because he was not Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin was catastrophically bad after his rookie year, and Devin Funchess was bad, but because he wasn't catastrophically bad, he got a little bit of the benefit of the doubt there. And the $13 million is just, it's a head scratcher. We both wanted them to get Golden Tate to the Giants. I think that the Colts didn't want to give that money to Golden Tate because they take out a 4-year contract with like 20 something million guaranteed. I think just punching Devin Funchess into their massive cap for 1 year, it's not the best thing that could have happened, but it's not the worst. I just think it's dumb. It's bad money. It's the problem that I have with John Lynch and the 49ers is it's like $13 million. Like, okay, Devin Funchess can play a role. Like I said, he's a tight end playing wide receiver. That's a role in the NFL. But if you evaluated him to be good, your valuation is way off at $13 million a year. It's the same thing John Lynch and the Niners. Give Quan Alexander a record contract. Give Kyle Juszczyk a record contract. Give Malcolm Smith a ton of money. Give just D Ford like $18 million a year after one good year, really. And it's like, it's this issue that some GMs have, and I fear for the Colts that it's a valuation versus evaluation issue where it's a GM, Chris Ballard with the Colts or Chris Ballard. Yeah. Chris Ballard says, all right, I want to have Devin Funchess in the building. Let's make that happen. And then they end up overpaying for players. And that's when you get that. That's where if you're a playoff team, like the Colts are, it stops you from being a Super Bowl team. If you're a marginal team in the NFL, like the Niners are with a, healthy Jimmy G, they're an like 8-9 win team. It stops you from being a playoff team. And so it's these contracts around the edges that I fear for the Colts that if you're giving Devin Funchess $13 million a year, like what's going on, not with your player evaluation, but your player valuation. Are you valuing getting your guys in the building no matter the cost? Because that will, that puts a cap on that. That puts a ceiling on the, on your ability to compete. And so that's actually what worries me about this Devin Funchess contract.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, yeah. I mean, if you look at a year by year basis, it's definitely not worth that money. He's not up there with those kind of guys that are getting $13 million per year. I think that the only reason why he's getting that is because it is a 1 year deal. But still, I mean, To me, you can't say, okay, you can't turn to Dontrell Inman and go, hey, since you're a free agent, I'll tell you what, can we pay you 1 year, $10 million or $9 million and see what he says? You know what I'm saying?
There would have, I mean, he would have signed that contract in record time, milliseconds. That contract would have been signed if they offered him $9 million a year. And that's that $4 million can go somewhere else. That $4 million buys you a backup cornerback that you're going to need, or, you know, a third linebacker, something like that. And that's getting more value out of the position. That's a swing interior offensive lineman positions that you're going to need multiple of them throughout the year because they get hurt all the time. And I just don't think the marginal value of Devin Funchess versus Dontrell Inman is, even in this hypothetical scenario where $9 million for Inman's a lot, that extra $4 million is just not there. It's just not there. It's bad money is what it is. And I'm wondering if maybe they screwed up a decimal. 1 year, $1.3 million. But that's enough of that. That's I just had to get the whole Devin Funchess thing off my chest. So, Mike, we talked about Devin Funchess and Eric Ebron for the last 6 hours. So who's your number two loser this week?
And my number two guy is a newly found New York Jet. 3 years, $28.5 million. And that is Jameson Crowder. And here we go. Speaking of money. So that's an average of little over, $9 million. So Jameson Crowder, who's a great pass catcher. I don't know if he's a great wide receiver, but the dude can catch almost anything thrown his direction. He's going to get a little over $9 million a year. Devin Funchess, $13 million a year. So I think that puts all that in perspective with that. And what I think about Crowder is he's basically going out of the frying pan and into the fryer. So he has both Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa to compete with. I mean, obviously Anderson and Enunwa are going to be on the wings. He's going to be in the slot. Crowder's going to be in the slot. But you have a quarterback who's Sam Darnold. And I don't see how many receivers are going to have great numbers when your quarterback right now is Sam Darnold. So probably most of the receptions are going to go to Robbie Anderson. And Crowder and Nunwa are going to probably battle out for second or third. And then you also have the tight end there that's doing pretty well. And that's probably going to be the safety valve for Donald. So it's just not a good fit for Jameson Crowder. If things do break right for him, he is, as I said, a talented pass catcher in the slot, which could mean great PPR numbers if that offense is skewed towards that direction. But I just don't see it with Sam Darnold. And I see him throwing deeper passes and just that slot position not being used any more than, say, wide receiver set, three set. And you have to say, okay, well, Jameson Crowder is now in the slot. We have to take care of him. So it's more of a schematic than someone that they're going to go to on a routine basis. Crowder, I think the most he's caught is like 60-something passes. I don't see that this year. I mean, I think you're going to see him down probably in the mid-40s to the high 30s. Touchdowns are probably going to be non-existent. And being a slot receiver, you're going to see a very low output in yards. So you could say 38 receptions and close to 400 yards, and that's pretty much Jameson Crowder's output, which is just horrible for fantasy values.
Yeah, he got a lot of pub for, he could potentially have been a breakout last year in Washington and going to the Jets with, all the wide receivers there, Aninwa Robinson or Robbie Anderson, and then Herndon, like you mentioned, and then Lev Bell. Yeah, I agree. There's just not a there's not a lot there for him. I think this is a move that's better for him NFL wise, because I think Washington's going to be a mess the next few years while they sort out the cap hit from Alex Smith, and then Alex Smith's never going to play again, more than likely. So they got to get a new quarterback, develop him. So you're looking at 3 years before he'll have competent quarterback production. So I think this was a solid NFL move for him to, you know, go to a team that's kind of ascendant with the addition of Le'Veon Bell. And then also adding, didn't they add CJ Mosley on defense?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So they're ascendant. And, but I think, yeah, it's not going to do great things for his fantasy football production in 2019 or really ever again, unless you know, a lot of guys get hurt there or move on, or yeah, they become the most prolific
in there too. So that's a good point.
Yeah, or unless they, you know, they become like the most prolific offense ever. So yeah, but I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to go out on that's won't put that together. My number one guy, it's kind of a cheat. Number one biggest loser this week is running back 49ers. So that's Jerick McKinnon, Matt Breida, Tevin Coleman, who signed this week to a 2-year, $10 million deal, which his agent was sleeping on the job. And do you know why his agent was sleeping on the job? Because he's left Bell's agent. And so he just kind of like put all his energy into that. And then signed Tevin Coleman to a real junk deal. It's 2 years, $10 million, nothing guaranteed in the second year, no signing bonus. And it's like 8.6 million base with most of that in the second year. And then Irons can just cut him without, you know, any dead money. It's a really bad contract for Tevin Coleman. It's shockingly bad. Like as bad as the Quan Alexander's contract is for the Niners, that's how bad this one is for Tevin Coleman. But then today also Raheem Mostert, who started a few games from last year, ran well in those games. He re-signed with the Niners as well. So you've got Jerick McKinnon, Tevin Coleman, Matt Breida, Raheem Mostert, and then also Kyle Juszczyk gets a lot of run back there as a fullback, you know, more of an H-back type guy. That's a mess. I mean, that's a verifiable, certifiable mess. I mean, you've got three guys who would all be top 25 running backs if they were on other teams back there. And then Mostert does contribute. Because, I mean, McKinnon, Coleman, Breida. Coleman consistently drafted as a top 25 running back over the course of his career. Jerick McKinnon was going borderline top 12, top 15 last year before he tore his ACL. And Breida was one of the best fantasy running backs in the league last year. So you've just got this incredible, absolute mess. And I don't know. I mean, do they cut Jerick McKinnon? I mean, that would be kind of crazy because they gave him this huge contract last season and he ends up not even playing a single down with them. That would be ridiculous. None of them are really goal line backs. They're going to cannibalize each other all year. Jerick McKinnon and Matt Breida are both injury liabilities. And it's just like, if it was just one of these guys or two of these guys, it would be great. The Niners were fourth in yards from scrimmage last year from running back. So it's like, there is a running back offense there, but it's just going to be chopped up too many ways. And there's also a limited upside for them because they had the fourth most yards from scrimmage from running backs. They had the fourth fewest touchdowns. So it's like this pie is, it's just going to get cut up too many ways. None of them's going to produce enough to have a good quality fantasy football season. I think they're going to get overdrafted and really what you're praying for, and you don't want to pray for this, for one of them to be fantasy relevant over the rest is an injury. And, you know, it's probably going to be Matt Breida because he showed last year he can't even finish a game. You don't know how many times that there was injury timeouts in a 49ers game for Matt Breida being down on the field. And he looked like he was never going to play again. And then all week he was busted up. And then guess who's playing on Sunday? Matt Breida again. So I don't know. The 49ers whole running back room is probably my biggest fantasy loser because they're going to get pretty overdrafted next year, I think.
Yeah, it really doesn't make much sense. I don't know what they were hoping for out of Tevin Coleman. The only thing that I can think is the way you structured his contract is they don't really have a lot of faith in McKinnon as far as it being able to bounce back from that ACL injury. So they went out and got a similar type back in that situation. So Outside of that, it really doesn't make much sense at all.
Yeah, it's just going to be, I mean, unless they can run three running back sets. I mean, there's just not enough room for them to all be on the field, especially because they went out and they signed Jordan Matthews this week. So it's like, there's not room. This offense isn't going to be that good. There's not room to give those guys, you know, 15 touches per game and give George Kittle his targets and give Dante Pettis his targets and give Jordan Matthews his targets. It's just, it's a mess. They didn't need Tevin Coleman, and it's going to cause problems unless they cut Jerick McKinnon. Like that's the only move they can make. If they cut Matt Breida, they're insane because he's an undrafted free agent who's way outperforming that contract. So like we talked about valuation versus evaluation, that's what you want is a guy like that. You want championships. I mean, other than great quarterbacks, it's because of guys like George Kittle, fifth round pick on his rookie contract. Guys like Matt Breida, undrafted free agent on his rookie contract. Guys who are making, you know, six figures a year who are producing at eight figures worth of value. Those are the guys that you want to keep on your team. So your only option here is cutting Jerick McKinnon, who was your big free agent acquisition at running back last year. It's just bad roster construction. It's just bad priorities. But if they keep them all, then that's going to be bad production because it's going to be too crowded. So that whole room is my number one loser this week.
Yeah, and then like you said, they signed Mostert. So obviously I think that's their plan, is to keep them all.
Yeah, and they're not going to cut Mostert because he's obviously last in the pecking order for targets, for touches, I mean, but he is a special teams ace, so he's not going anywhere.
And he played well
when he got a shot. So who is your number one loser this week?
My number one loser is going back to the Tennessee Titans, Marcus Mariota.
Continue. Is it his Movember mustache? Is that why?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't stand that thing. That needs to be cut. Well, he needs to be cut. He's horrible. Absolutely horrible. Here was a guy that was the second pick of the NFL draft out of Oregon and has done absolutely zero in the last two seasons. He's thrown for 24 touchdowns with 23 interceptions in 28 starts. So he's not even averaging a touchdown per game. He's in his final season of his contract, and that was one of the reasons why I was talking about Ryan Tannehill kind of making his way as the starter, because if the Tennessee Titans play horribly and they're not doing good, and Mariota is doing what he's doing, throwing, you know, one touchdown, two interceptions, or whatever, they're not tied to him. And he's making a hell lot of money this year. I think he's making like $20 million or some crazy thing. He's definitely he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. And Tannehill can do pretty much whatever Mariota can do, maybe even better. Not much better, but possibly better. So I think that is the real reason why Mariota is the loser in this, because they brought in a quarterback just like him that could probably outplay him. And they, you know, they don't have to go, okay, well, we have Blake Bortles, and so what are we going to do? They actually have a legitimate quarterback now, and could definitely spell the end of Mariota before this end of the season's over.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty big loser, and it wasn't even a free agent signing. It was a trade going out and getting Tannehill. I have trouble disagreeing with the Marcus Mariota take. He hasn't developed at all, and he can't stay healthy. He can't stay on the field. You can arguably blame his struggles last year on his pinched nerve, but you're making excuses for a guy who should be out of excuses by now. That's kind of how I feel about Marcus Mariota. He would have to take a huge step forward huge step forward to be the Titans quarterback of the future. And, you know, it's never good news as the starting quarterback when a team trades for a guy who is a starting quarterback.
Right.
That's not good news. It's not like wide receivers where, you know, multiple guys can, you know, as a wide receiver, you wouldn't like it, but as a quarterback, you really wouldn't like it because your butt's going to the bench when that happens. So, that's a pretty big loser for them. And I'm shocked about how aggressive you are, I guess I would say, about how much Marcus Mariota is going to lose. Because it's definitely, when I saw that, I definitely didn't think it was a good thing, but you're really going all in, huh?
Yeah, you know, he's one of the players I guess I'm sort of attached to, because the moment they drafted him and the moment he came out of college, I just sort of picked him as a bust. And so now that he's sort of working that way anyways, it's sort of like, I guess I'm boasting that I was right about him.
it's that like, hey, I was already right about this. Let me double and triple down.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right. So those are this week's winners and losers. We'll run them down again. Mike's winners were Adam Humphries, Latavius Murray, and Lamar Miller. His losers were Nick Foles, Jamison Crowder, and Marcus Mariota. Two quarterbacks there. Interesting. My winners were number three was Mike Williams with LA. I feel like I have to specify that because there have been roughly like a million Mike William wide receivers, it feels like, in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, all within the last like 10 to 15 years, just all these Mike Williamses. But the young one in LA, then Latavius Murray, I agree, he's a big winner this week. And then Baker Mayfield's my number one. My losers are Gus Edwards, Eric Ebron, and the 49ers running back room. That would be Jerick McKinnon, Tevin Coleman, Matt Breida, and Raheem Mostert. Though if you're really looking towards Raheem Mostert for any fantasy football production this year, do not invite me to your league, because that league is far too deep.
Yeah, right.
that sounds painful to play in. Unless you get like points for special teams tackles, then that's Raheem Mostert's a good pick. But again, that league sounds way too painful. So I think that'll do it for this week, Mike. Any parting words? Any bonus winners or losers you want to talk about?
No, I think that, I mean, outside of Le'Veon Bell getting a guaranteed contract to come to the Jets and basically watch his career implode is basically the only really thing that I can talk about as far as what transpired.
Yeah, you got that bag, though. Secured that bag. So, all right. So thanks for listening, everybody. Again, this has been Jeff Crisco with Mike Valverde. This is the Football Absurdity Podcast. You can check us out on Apple Music, anything that uses the Apple Music database, and Spotify. And please, if you liked what you heard, please rate, review. I stuck this at the end to not remind people if they turned it off early if they hated it. So, so all right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. We'll talk a little bit more fantasy football and hopefully have some fun along the way. So thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good one. So